Hello and welcome to Hustle, a new podcast providing industry advice for women in music. Are you passionate about music and want to stop the hustle and make your dreams a reality? Then this is the podcast for you. Not only do I interview other female artists, but labels, promoters, collectives, and everything in between. I also dive into the nitty-gritty business and marketing side. You can expect positive energy, motivation, a lot of laughs, and of course, inspiring guests. Hosted by myself, Eliza, the founder of Good Vibes Only Music, I'm a full-time DJ and entrepreneur. Thank you for listening. Please follow and subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Peace, love, and good vibes always. So today, we're going to be speaking to Ivanka, also known as Mini Da Mix, electro house breakbeat DJ with a deep passion for bassline. She's a girl who's not scared to mix it up with all kinds of funky shit. Having played in all corners of the globe, from South Africa to Thailand, Russia to America, Minxie gets around and continues to drop her signature of fat bass at major festivals all around the UK and throughout Europe, including Glastonbury and the Portuguese festival Frequency. Hey, mate, how are you?
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. Thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule to come on the podcast.
Well, it's less busy on the gigs nowadays. The surviving pandemic is a task on its own.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, that's what we're talking about just before we started this. Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, the whole music scene's gone a little bit kind of crazy. Everything's on hold. You know, what are your views for 2021?
There is a hopeful view, and then there is a pessimistic view, and the hopeful one would like to win. They'd be like, all fine, and we are back to how it used to be. But pessimistic one is kind of going, how is this going to work? Are we all going to get vaccinated, or are we all going to get tested at a festival? So I'm impatient. I'm sitting impatiently and waiting, because I have heard on a grapevine that there's somebody is figuring out how to do this. I think it was a Boomtown people did a little post kind of going, they had just some meeting, and it's exciting news. So I'm sitting on my tippy toes and waiting.
That is really exciting. I mean, God, I really do hope that somebody sorts something out. I mean, yes. Anybody, just anybody, figure out
anybody,
something.
Anything.
Yeah, how are we going to get back to, like, how are we going to get back to being behind the decks and big parties and people dancing and just life? I don't know.
I got a microchip us now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, why not?
Like, why not?
I mean, we've taken
it. We just want a DJ.
Yeah, that's it. Jab me up. Let's go. Yeah. Oh, mate. Well, please tell us. Please tell us how you got into DJing in the first place.
I went to South Africa when I was 22, I think. Yeah, I was 22. I followed some friends I've met in Czech Republic. They had a label called African Dope Records, and I've met them there. It was a duo called Crushing and Sorted and Mood Phase 5, and these became really quickly good friends, and I was looking to leave Czech Republic to go somewhere. So I was trying the UK at the time, actually, and it wasn't possible. You had to have a visa to work and work to get a visa. And I was like, well, fine, I'm going somewhere else. So I ended up here anyway. Yeah. And I went to South Africa for allegedly half year, and I stayed there for 3.5 years. And within pretty much a few months when I was there, there was a very low number of girl DJs there. And I used to be a dancer, so I've always been into music in some way or another. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at some DJ playing CDs, and I was saying to my friend, I could do this. Well, anybody could do this. You know, people's playing CDs. And he's like, well, you should really do that. We need more girls. And I just gave it a go, and instantly it became a passion. So like after that first really painful months when you're trying to beat match and you don't know what you're doing, but then, you know, it was something that I took instant liking to, because it was really easy because I had the dance background. Mm-hmm. And apparently I was good at it, because I'd done really quickly well myself, and it's much easier hobby than dancing, like on a semi-professional level, because you pretty much drinking in a club with your mates, rather than practicing four times a week painfully on your own. And I'm like, yeah, screw dancing. This is what I want to do.
I love the fact that you're like, I can do that. Actually, I can do that. I'm going to do that. And you did it. I mean, brilliant.
I had a great support, I must say, because, you know, there in South Africa, I didn't encounter this whole macho macho side of the industry. I've, at least from the people I've met, I was always welcome and they were embracing girls behind decks, rather than when I then had a later experience in Europe, when I first time went to Europe as a DJ, I had an opposite and I had to prove myself every single time. And that's when the struggle really becomes. Whether in South Africa, I just felt supported throughout. I'm not sure whether that was just because I had the group of friends I was amongst, or whether it was just naturally, culturally more supportive of women in a macho industry.
Yeah, that's really, it's mad, isn't it? Because it is a bit of a battle all the time. But I think it's more of a, well, I mean, apart from the whole equality side of things, I think it's very dog eat dog, isn't it? So it really is like, you know,
absolutely.
And then if you don't know it, then there's somebody else who does, and you know, no one's around to help anyone out. It's really it's not very friendly sometimes, which is a bit of a shock, isn't it? Because music creates so much joy in people's lives. You'd have thought behind the decks there would still be that almost connectivity and joy and helpfulness, but it's not always the case, is it?
No, I think it's, there's something I've been thinking about in the last few years, and I think it's kind of the whole ego side of the thing, that in order, because you are a performer, and in order to stand up in front of a room full of people and kind of, in a way, you put your heart out, right, because you are giving them your best music for the occasion, and they could turn around and say, oh, this is disgusting. And you would be really gutted if somebody did. I mean, you learn to play to a various crowd, and here and there, if you play to a wrong crowd, you can get requests, as we all know, and stuff. But in a generally, to perform, you do need to at least look like you believe in yourself. And I think then when people do tell you that you are great and you're doing it, then that feeds that whole ego side of the thing, and then interferes with the whole social side of it, what you're saying is like being friendly, and it's kind of, and it becomes a real competition. It's kind of, or you feel it's a competition, isn't it? It's like you have to be better in order to achieve something and to get somewhere, because if you don't, then you will be left behind. Like, for example, the whole thing, how social media now became really imperative in sort of success of a person, that it's not just that you are good. It's long time ago, we left behind the fact that if you were good, then you could succeed. And that's not true anymore. Nowadays, if you are good and you're not good on social media, then it's really bad for you. Then you're not going to get much exposure, because you can't play the game.
No, I mean, we've given that up for, like, you know, how many likes you've got or how many followers.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, man. Actually, my first interview on the podcast was with China Lawan. She runs the We Run the World female DJ agency. And she said that she was actually chatting about this and she said that one of her bookings, they booked an inquiry. They ended up booking this guy off of Instagram, because if he had a huge Instagram following, and he was so bad that they refused to pay him. And they were like, China, what were we doing? And she was like, well, what do you expect? Like, you know, you've booked him because he was like, yeah, but he was great on Instagram. She was like, well, that probably wasn't him. You know, have you ever seen a video? Have you seen anything else he's done apart from his however many Instagram followers? I mean, he's, you know, it's funny, isn't it? Like you give up actually being good or like proving yourself technical wise, because you've got X amount of followers. It's mental.
That's mental. It's just kind of, and it also evolves. And you know, like I come from break scene. That's kind of where I used to play purely breakbeat for a good 4 or 5 years. My first like DJing. I mean, here and there something a bit of disco here and a little bit of, you know, party tunes and stuff. But it was kind of, I was quite, you know, breakbeat focused, and yeah. And then And then breakbeat was really, when I arrived to London, I came in the height of it. What's the right expression here? In the heights of the breakbeat.
Yeah, that
scene. That's the one. It was amazing. It was a kind of, I've moved in, I knew a couple people in London, but I knew people on the scene. I just kind of came in, met everybody through a forum, and that was a 3 nights a week, and you were going out all the time. And then suddenly when the social media, or the whole industry shifted around, I'm not sure whether it's 5-6 years ago, and suddenly all these amazing breaks producers now are absolutely unknown to a general sort of music kind of knowledge. You know, there is breaks are, in a way, seems like a dead scene because, it's resurrecting itself now. But it's mad that you are building yourself up, you're making amazing music, and then just because of some shift of the kind of not, again, things that are not in your control and are kind of social media or other things in play, and you just, from being a busy producer, DJs, become nobody in a way. Yeah. I mean, not nobody, but you know what I mean, in that kind of sense, in that what you've been building up for your career. So I'm glad I managed to ride it and shifted myself into electro house as well and other genres. But I think as well, it's not because I was trying to follow the trend. I was just naturally getting interested. You know, Plum DJs, when they were doing the really chunky electro house, I was like, yes, that's me so much. So that's kind of where I've modeled myself on, I think. And now I don't feel like I'm there is kind of an electro house scene per se, because that's shifted to EDM, and you kind of go, wow, this is like, what do you do now? And I think I managed to do my best in the festival scene, and just like kind of nondescript, you know, not non-genre specific scene, and just making the rounds on the festival circuit.
Yeah, it's funny how the whole music, how you evolve music-wise, and it's not because you've fallen out of love with a particular genre, it's just because you've heard a couple of tunes and they're absolutely fucking banging, and then that leads you down another path, isn't it? I really love Jack in House. I love Jack in House, and I love it because there's like, you know, Eminem remixes, or there's like Will Smith remixes, which just takes me back to like, you know, like the 90s youth, and I was like, this is brilliant, I love this, which goes down really well for après ski, as you can imagine. But in my heart of hearts, I'm a drum and bass DJ. It doesn't mean I'm not going to try and evolve back to that way, but you just go with the flow. And also, I think when you play out, like, you may have a set, give or take a set already done, but when you see what people like and what works and doesn't work, that goes right out the window, doesn't it? And you're like, right, trying to play this and we'll make this in, and I think it's cool to be able to play multiple genres.
It's definitely, you must have the same thing with the in the ski resorts as like the festivals. You never know who is going to be on the dance floor, so you kind of you do need a little bit of flexibility, because otherwise you're gonna end up like the person that people have requests to. it's like, can I have a request? No.
What is it? You're shoving their phone in your face, or their Spotify. Can you play this tune for me, please? No, I can't.
I'm not a jukebox
tonight. I actually don't mind taking requests in various circumstances. Like, I've got.
Yes, no.
But not when I'm at a festival and I've been booked to play somewhere to play the stuff I'm supposed to play. Don't put your phone in my face.
No. It's like somebody said, if you do I come to your office and tell you and ask you to run me a program or something, you know? Yeah. It sounded like I didn't even know what people in the office would do.
Can I sit in your chair and have a go on your keyboard? No.
Yeah. No.
So funny.
You know what? This is something as well that I've kind of, that has been the beginning of our, I'm really happy that you, one of the people kind of who helped the plight of the women in the equality in the industry. And you must remember back in the day, when it was kind of hit and miss, that you would get an odd bloke who would just come and just thought that there's a girl behind deck, so I'm just going to shove her off and have a mix or tell her what to do or something. And you kind of, it's absolutely infuriating. I mean, that doesn't happen anymore, at least. I haven't seen it, but
that comes down to confidence as well. I mean, I've got a really good death stare. You start coming and fucking around behind the decks, fiddling with knobs. I had somebody who was supporting So Solid last year, just in a local gig in Hertfordshire, actually. And I was on, and then this guy wanted to come and like unplug his stuff midway through my set. He turned all the power off, and I was just security. What are you doing? And I said afterwards, this is not cool. Like, this is not what happens. Don't you dare ever try and do this to anyone ever again. It's not professional. Like, I wouldn't come and try and unplug my stuff. Can't you wait another 15 minutes till I'm finished? And then it seems like, I just wanted to get my stuff out of the way. No, mate. It's not what happens. Everyone was
The guys.
Yeah, everyone's booing him. Boo.
Boo. Yeah, absolutely. Or the guys who come and start setting up their stuff halfway through your set. You're like, if you are not so organized that you need to fucking half an hour to set up your stuff and you are in my space, like nowadays, I'm definitely like, that's a best there. Or like, get out. Once somebody, and actually I'm friends with this person now, just like somebody came and it's like, oh, can I just have a mix a tune with you? Not a chance. It's like, wait your turn.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's funny though, isn't it? It's like people are, can I have a go? I'm a DJ. Well, you know, I really, I love confidence. I'm well up for that. But no, you can't have a go. It's not this type of situation. We're not at home. You come to my house and I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Come and have a play. But you know, festival gigs, club, nightclubs, and then people turn nasty. I just don't think people like being told no these days, and they don't have any respect for you as a business and as a business entity, as a DJ. It's a funny old game.
It is, as you said, it's a doggy dog. It's a doggy dog industry, and it's really interesting how you would think it's one of the funnest jobs to do at a festival. And we are, you know, and I understand that like a festival cruise, builds cruise and video cruise and all them, they really graft. They graft for hours and hours and hours. And my husband is one of them, and I've got lots of friends, and they always take a mick out of me. They're like, oh yeah, the star arrived, you know, and they're like, oh, the DJs, they just turn up and do this and do that. But at the end of the day, it's like, there would be no show if there were no DJs. You know? Do you remember, guys? It is about the music. It's like, please give us some respect.
They should learn DJ, shouldn't they? They should give it a go.
Go on, you do. You do it. Like, no, I don't want to be in the spotlight. I'm like, you see, this is where my head is so big it can't fit through the door.
Can you remember your first festival gig and how did you get it? Was it in South Africa or?
Festival gig, you know what, I think I'm do you know what, like a festival, I think it must have been UK, because in South Africa they don't have many festivals per se. So no, I'm lying. Okay, I'll take this back. So I have played at a festival, but it was a city festival, like, so we got multiple stages set up through the town. So I played in Cape Town and in Johannesburg, and then one festival called Opikopi. You see, I've almost forgot. Jesus. And those were, you know, and those were absolutely amazing experiences. Opikopi is actually rock festival, and then my friends run stage there that was dance music, and I got the, because in nature of what I play, I was playing like a really prime time set, and I remember I was so nervous that I got too drunk, so I had to go lie down, and then I woke up and I was really cold because it was in the South African winter and it's, you know, it gets quite cold, and I couldn't, when I was going through my records, I was just so nervous, the first one, you know, and you kind of go, no. And then you start playing and the music speaks for itself and you relax into it and stuff. And so that was, I think that South Africa, but I always, you know, the UK scene is something everybody is looking up to still around the world. And I remember I was kind of, and I came here and I went to first festival. I was like, I really wonder what was the first festival. I can't even remember. I think Glade was the first one I went to, not played at. And I'm not sure whether actually Glastonbury was my first gig, because I played for Mutated Waste Company, who are this group of punk artists, punk sculpture artists from 80s who do this metal sculptures, and they are quite heavily involved in the Naughty Corner in Glastonbury. So I've kind of really arrived again in a really high point in 2008 and played my first gig to a couple thousand people, and I was just like, wow, this is amazing. And almost it feels like I've done the best times of Glastonbury. I don't feel like I can get any better. It's sort of getting worse every year, maybe because I'm sober.
That is
pregnant Glastonbury last year, I must say, was not the easiest thing. It was a really hot one. And yeah, that was not the, I was kind of thinking, what have I done to myself? Why am I here actually? Why am I playing six sets when I'm 8 to 7 months pregnant or something? So
yeah, that's mad. Yeah. I mean, I saw you at Shindig, which was the beginning of May last year.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're pregnant then, but not heavily pregnant. So
no.
Imagine Glastonbury must have been a struggle because everything's an hour away. It's an hour here.
Everything is an hour away. Yeah, it is. And it was
hour home, hour to the 10, hour here, hour to
It was crazy. It was because it was so hot. Because everybody thinks that Glastonbury in when it rains is can be really difficult, but Glastonbury when it's hot is way worse. There is no shade. And you just kind of no shade. It's really dusty. You know, there's 250,000 people making dust. So it's kind of, yeah, it was, but I did it. I was like, I've got, Archie's been to his first Glastonbury before he was even born.
That's amazing. So talk to me about being a mum and taking a kind of, have you taken a break from, obviously COVID made you had a break.
Yes, COVID break, so extended maternity leave.
How's it working for you?
I was planning on going sort of straight back, but in a way I was planning on to bringing baby with me to all these festivals as well. And in a way I'm kind of glad that maybe I didn't, because it would have been quite, you don't imagine what it is like to have a baby. And I have seen people at the festivals with babies, but it just sounds like now when I know how it is, I'm like, they may have been a really not nice experience, because your baby might be teething or maybe upset and you can't put them to sleep, and then you're not at home and you are in a van, and that would have been probably quite difficult. So no, I ended my maternity after 4 months, and I did a gig as Evil Twin with my partner Madame Electrify in Brighton, where we were headlining and Volks and the cabaret night, and that was amazing. I was just like, wow, brilliant, 4 months, and I'm back in the game. I was so happy to be out as well, because I only could come up for a little bit. I was just like really dancing quickly. I was like, yep, and he's like, don't talk to me, I want to just enjoy. We can be yakking. We can yak on the phone, but right now we had a club and I just want to dance, and that was great. That was a great night. And then I was just planning to kind of have a maybe easier summer than last year's, when I did pretty much full DJ schedule while being pregnant, because I was considering of maybe not taking some bookings or shows, but it's all booked up really early in the year, and you're early pregnant and you kind of go, well, I'm not going to go cancelling anything. I don't know how I'm going to be feeling, and why wouldn't I be DJing pregnant, right?
Yeah,
because... in the beginning, I thought maybe it's not healthy, but then what's not healthy about it? I made a really extensive research into whether a loud noise can damage the baby in the womb.
Okay.
And there is loads of research that it can only damage if you are like working in some really noisy environment for really extensive hours. So yes, I'm not crazy and I'm not going to go and spend 12 hours in front of a bass bin. That would probably not, that's good.
Not anymore.
But there is, there is nothing. It's all about, and in fact, that potential damage that you could cause with the loud sound over a long period of time is the stress rather than sound itself. And then I've been really, because I was really concerned about it, I'm really researched it, and the baby is suspended in a liquid in your womb, so everything is kind of you know, the sound frequencies just really reduce, and also their eardrum is in a liquid, so it's not touching, so it can't mechanically damage. So yeah, in the end I was like, no, it's good if it's good for mama, it's good for baby. And I really enjoyed being the part, like one of the poster mums, poster DJ mums, you know, like yes we can do it, why not? Why can't we DJ pregnant? I mean, you don't see it. This is probably why I questioned it, because you don't see it. Mm. And I have friends like a DJ Tamsin, who, you know, 20 years ago or 20, maybe 30 years ago, she had a kid, and she said she DJed right up to giving birth. But I didn't see that, and you don't really see it. I've never in my life seen a pregnant DJ. You know, not in a club, not in a festival, nowhere. So you go, can I do it? And then you go, oh, why couldn't you do it? Why can't we? Why can't? What's the difference? And it was amazing to see the reactions of the crowd. Like at Shambhala, which was months before I gave birth, we were playing as the evil twin again with Metamorphosis, and I had I made a disco ball on my belly. I had friends and my husband sitting for hours and sticking mirror balls on my belly, like on a dress, not directly, because I was like, I want to have a disco ball. It says my baby's going as disco ball. And then I put a little light on my wrist, so I was like I had a light system. And somebody, and quite a few people, or people from the crowd were like, are you pregnant? I was like, yep. And they're like, wow, she's pregnant. Like, yes, I am. And you know, and you are absolutely off your face, enjoying your music so much, you're climbing the walls. So that's brilliant, you know. And it was two bed mice were DJing after us or before us, I can't remember now. And he thought, and his girlfriend, that it's actually just the, you know, that that's just the costume. And they're like, no, you're actually pregnant. And I'm like, yes, I am actually pregnant. It's like, it's just so unseen, you know, it's just so unusual that it really kind of stops people in their tracks. Yeah. And sorry, to answer how it is to be mum, it's most wonderful thing in the world. And, you know, I appreciate the time with the baby at home. And I just did a couple gigs over the pandemic and the sort of the allowed, you can do the restaurant bar sort of thing. And it's nice to get out, nice to play to people. And the otherwise it has to be a Twitch, the online, the streams. And it's, you know, I'm itching. I'm not going to lie to you. I would just love to go back, do my thing. I would love my boy to see me do my thing. I was planning on taking to a festival to kind of, this is what mummy does. This is what you're listening to in the tummy.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, just coming back to what you were saying about you don't see anyone who's pregnant. I mean, I think it was you were the first person that I've seen who's a pregnant female DJ. And then I've seen two, you and another girl, Eleni. She played for me at Wilkstock Festival, which is what I do in Stevenage normally, once a year. And she was so heavily pregnant. She was running a stage. I mean, absolute hats off to this girl. She was running a stage over the three-day festival, running a stage on my bass stage. And then she played two sets on my stage. And one of them was like really late on the last night. She was so pregnant. She could barely touch the turntable. And I was like, mate, at any point you want to stop, I'm ready to take over. I was like, you know, nope. Nothing bad on you whatsoever. I can just, you know, it's day three and you're playing like second from last set. I was like, dude, hats off. But you just don't see it. I think people don't want to, or women don't want to put themselves in a situation where they're surrounded by lots of people. Maybe it's a motherly instinct. I mean, there's loads of drugs, there's loads of craziness. I mean, we all know what a festival's like. And maybe they just can't be bothered. I don't know. I mean, I would be, if I was ever pregnant, I'd like to carry on working all the way through, mainly for the money. Then, you know, as self-employed, you've got to have that break, haven't you, afterwards?
You do, you don't want to be going out. I think the first 3 months I couldn't see myself after giving birth to be going out anywhere. Like you're really enjoying the time with your baby, getting to know each other and the whole love bubble. And it's like kind of, I wouldn't want to go to a club. But then, you know, up until then, you go, the way I'd coped with it is you go for a nap before your set. So I've never done that in my life. You know, you actually go for a little lie down, and then you have a, you know, the coffee and a brownie to give you energy.
Caffeine and sugar.
Yeah, and you kind of, and then you just take a piss out of all the fat people. It's just brilliant. You know, some people, let me be honest, people on pills are great companions. They're just so, you know, they're just so much fun and fluffy. And, you know, mm-hmm. I had friends looking after me at Noisily Festival, and that was really dangerous because it was so muddy. It just rained when I was having a lie down. Yeah. And then I was going for my set, and my friends came pick me up, and it was just like, we're like, shit, like, this is, it's because Noisily is set inward, and it's got, it was like kind of really quick rain, and it was that really slippery mud, mm-hmm. and we were like, fuck, you know, the last thing you want is to fall over while you're pregnant. And then, and a stage manager from our stage have just fallen over just before that. He's like, please, please be careful. I was like, I am. And then I was like, I've got my my life in the hands of my filled up friends.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
I'm not sure who was supporting who there at the time. But, yeah, yeah. But we made it.
He was in charge.
So yes.
Cool. I think it's really good. I think it's really inspiring to talk about being a mum and a DJ and, you know, just how to make it work. Because, like, you know, we don't see people about doing this, and it's good for people to know that it is okay to carry on with your music career. Not, you know, it's not all loss just because you're having a kid.
Absolutely.
I think is definitely a stigmatism attached to taking a break from the career, because, like we're saying, it's so dog eat dog out there, and you know it might be hard to come back into it because you've had that gap. I mean, yours might have only been three or four months, but some people might have taken 6 months or a year. And then I suppose it's imposter syndrome again that comes into it. You know, am I still good enough, or all of those types of aspects.
Oh my God. When my first gig was 4 months, is probably the longest I've ever had a gap. And I was like, how do you do this again? But it's obviously, you can't forget it at 4 months. But I was actually worried about this. I think I told you this when we went to Shindig. Mm-hmm. I was worried about for years when I was thinking about when I have a baby. And I was thinking it was a real factor to consider, because I do really enjoy what I do. It is my life. It's not about the fame, because it's not that. But it's about, you know, I really love making people happy on a dance floor. That's just what is my passion. And I was really worried because I was doing so well, and it takes such a long time to build yourself up. And I had last year, before I got pregnant, I had a really reassuring kind of summer when I was talking to all of the festival promoters that booked me that year, and I was talking to them about having a baby. They pretty much said that they would book me anytime if I want to have a year break. And it was just such a lovely thing to know that I've actually, over the years, I've built up, you know, it's a repeat business thing. It's like, if nobody heard about you yet, it's hard to get a gig with a person, because my production is still on a quiet low level. I only have a few tracks out, and I don't particularly promote myself as a producer, because those tracks are not quiet yet there for in my opinion. So you can't, you know, you're just kind of chipping away at it. So with DJing, our only way how to get known is to by playing somewhere and people seeing you in the real life and going, yes please, I want to hear you again, I'll come and see you at this festival and stuff like this. So you can't, if you take away the presence, you're scared that then you will be forgotten. But luckily, 1 year is nothing, even if I decided to have that. And I was just like, right, I can have a baby now. And you told me it's quite crazy that we have to consider this, that the fact that we have to consider that thing. And it is true that we still, I feel there is a quality now, much bigger than it used to be. Mm. But there is still that, you know, there is still kind of, as in every industry, I feel, women are still not 100% equal with men on this, you know, respect. Yeah. Why can't I? Why do I even have to think about whether I can have a baby or not?
Yeah, why do I have to work it out? Like, you know, whether it's after the festival season or before the festival season, or whether I can squeeze it in, or you know, when would be the year that I could do it, that I could have a career break, so that I can then get straight back into it, not only just for the money side, but so that you're still like prominent in people's minds. But it's scary. Yeah. I mean, I've come around to the way of thinking slightly, but if you'd have spoken to me a year ago, I'd have been like, no way. I can't take my foot off the pulse. I literally can't stop what I'm doing. I am full steam ahead. And then COVID's hit and everybody's fucked. No one.
There you go. Okay. back to basics.
Yeah.
But how do you keep yourself sane with podcasts and
I haven't had any work. I worked this summer here, which is really good.
You actually got gigs had gigs this summer.
I had a couple in a bar, but the whole rules were that people had to be sat down. I had outside gigs, kind of at Prey Bike, because there's a big mountain biking scene. But then that finished. I mean, I think my last gig was in August, and I haven't played since. Though we are in interseason, which is in between summer and winter. But I mean, they're not opening the ski season till the middle of January, which is a month and a half later than it normally would be. In November, I would be in Zermatt. That's not happened. So, I mean, I'm hoping no one's booking. I've got 3 bookings, but I mean, whether they happen or not, I don't know. I've got wedding bookings for summer, which is cool. But at the moment, I'm waiting to find out. I think when January hits, everybody will start messaging.
You will know.
Well, no, but the problem is because of the whole government. So they're not saying whether the bar restaurants can open or the ski lifts can open. So therefore, people can't really make a plan, or they don't want to make a plan. So then have to remake a plan. So we shall see. I'm just taking the opportunity to go out hiking a lot, get my fitness on track, try and be healthier. I started a podcast. That's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, yeah.
Mate.
I remember having a radio show. Bi-monthly radio show was enough hard work. Kind of. I keep on getting offers for radio shows. I'm like, no, sorry, I'm still not in ready for anything you can have to commit on a weekly basis.
Radio is a lot of work. I've interviewed a couple of people, and I used to have like some online radio shows, and I've done an FM, and the work that goes into that. And people, I'm the same as you. People say, would you like a radio show? And I'm like, no, I'm okay. Yes. No, I'm all right. But I'm doing I'm actually doing a guest mix for Sire's data transmission show. So that's, I've got a
brilliant
on Friday. So it's gonna be like Jack in House, Disco House, kind of fun. But yeah, it's
nice.
I don't know about you. I mean, obviously you've got a baby, but where the days are flying by, literally flying by. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, you kind of go, how did I have a full-time job before? How did we ever work? Because my husband's a live video cameraman, and he hasn't had work. He had 4 days work since the beginning of pandemic.
Wow.
And so he's been, he's been full on hands on dad. And we're both like, how did we do anything else apart from having a baby?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I just mixed our evil twin mix. Our first, finally, we put the mix together because we got asked by Life Support Machine blog to do that. And so we did like this lovely, remote collaboration, choose it together, and then I mixed it and really pleased with it. So that's going to be out in a few days.
Oh, that's cool. You'll have to send me a link to that so we can whack it in with the podcast notes for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's so that was, that's kind of like, I'm DJing again. And then I've started to do this Twitch stuff, which we want to do with Madame Electrophy, my evil twin. We have a plan to do kind of alternative weeks on Saturdays, I think from 7 till 8 or from 8 to 9. We want to do, and then once a while we're going to do like a raid on, raid off thing, or raid on, raid off, when we just do half an hour each on a Twitch for a few hours. That's gonna be cool as well. So
share it, like schedule it in, so it's not like every weekend, because
anyone
doesn't have a radio show or an online thing or anything like that. I mean, have a go, and then you'll appreciate how much work goes into it. But I do like the whole vibe where you can do 20 minutes on, 20 minutes off, and it's on the same kind of feed.
Yeah. It'd be fun as well, more because then you can talk to people in chat room. It feels like it's a little bit like going to bases. And I was saying to somebody after, because I did this part of a global funk family, they had a Halloween Twitch or treat. And so it was 24 hours of music. People who do the kind of from ghetto funk scene, like people like Hong Kong Ping Pong and B-side. And so there was like a 24-hour across worldwide thing. It was people, DJs from US, there were DJs here. I was really embarrassed because I had a technical difficulty, and I'm like, damn, I'm the only girl on the on there, and I had technical difficulty because I haven't done it before, because I should have actually tried to have a stream. It is not, you fail a couple of times before you get it right, sort of thing. It's apparently normal. But that was really good fun, and then I got on a chat room, and I was chatting to people because I was watching Danny Bath, and it was banging drum and bass, and kind of excited after you were playing and you're talking to everyone. And then I was like, don't you guys feel like we are back in 2006 when we were all listening to NSB radio and chatting on a forum? MySpace, exactly. Kind of regressed what it is like 14 years ago. We're back in back there. But we do have to do what you have to do, right? Just kind of, there is a community, and there is, it's just, we'll be back in force. People need music. We can't live without live events. We can't live without letting our hair down. So,
we will be back. 100% agree with you. People need to dance. People need to connect back with each other. I think there needs to be some more feeling in the world, doesn't there? Less sociopath kind of mentality and a bit more love.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, mate.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. What I've got here for your Facebook, facebook.com, dj.minidaminx with an X, and then the same for Instagram as well.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes, it is. That's me. I'm mainly, what I'm doing on Instagram. I don't put any baby pictures on Instagram or my Facebook, but once in a while, I think a Christmas elf picture, you can see my cute baby. And otherwise, it's all about music and silly stuff, really. Yeah. If you follow me on that, that's what I can promise.
Yeah.
Silly stuff and good music. Yeah. Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think that's what the world needs, silly chat and good music.
Literally. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And let's try and catch up again, in the new year, once the festival scene's back up and running, and we'll find out what you're up to then.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I can't wait.
I'll see you later. Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Bye. You've been listening to Hustle, industry advice for women in music. Thanks again for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Please, please, please follow, subscribe, rate and give us a review. Help us to move up in the iTunes chart so that we can bring you more and more amazing guests. Thanks again. For more info on what we're up to, please check out our website, www.goodvibesonlymusic.com. Peace, love and good vibes always. See you next week.